Let's read together 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 14 through 33. Now in the second half of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we have some further considerations concerning the proper use of Christian liberty. Let's begin by reading verses 14 through 22. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning at verse 14. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men. Judge for yourselves what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, though many, are one bread and one body, for we all partake of that one bread. Observe Israel after the flesh. Are not those who eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What am I saying then? That an idol is anything, or what is offered to idols is anything? Rather, that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. And I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the Lord's table and of the table of demons. Or do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than He? Let's begin our study of this half of 1 Corinthians chapter 10 with some background notes. Remember back in chapter 7 of this epistle, Paul began to answer questions that the Corinthian Christians had raised in a letter that they had sent to him. Questions about marriage and celibacy were answered in chapter 7. In chapter 8, Paul began answering questions about a believer's proper use of Christian liberty. In that culture, was it okay to eat food that had been dedicated to idols, for example? The answer was that, yes, in the non-moral areas, there was plenty of liberty for the believer. However, Christian liberty should be restricted if there is the possibility that younger, immature, and weaker Christians might be stumbled and hindered in their Christian growth as a result. Look again at chapter 8, verses 9 through 13. But beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall a weak brother perish or be ruined for whom Christ died? But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 9 through 13. So in chapter 8, Paul says that he would not eat food that had been dedicated to idols if a weaker brother or sister in the Lord would be stumbled, even though there was nothing evil about the food or in the eating of it. Now, many examples of potential stumbling areas could be given for the Christian today. Certain forms of entertainment, for example. The use of Sunday for secular activities. Drinking wine with your meals, and other practices where weaker Christians might be stumbled. Another danger concerning the proper use of Christian liberty is that we let our liberty go to license. That is why Paul, in chapter 9, says that the Christian life involves a lot of self-restraint and self-imposed restrictions and self-denial and self-discipline. In chapter 9, Paul used himself as a positive example. Look again at verses 26 and 27 of chapter 9. Therefore, I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself become disqualified. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 26 and 27. Now, in the first half of chapter 10, Paul used the children of Israel in their wilderness wanderings as a negative example. As God's people, they did not practice self-restraint and self-denial and self-discipline. And as a result, they lost out on blessing and reward. And the same thing will happen today to believers who don't practice self-denial and self-discipline and don't properly use their Christian liberty. Now here in the second half of chapter 10, Paul returns to the subject of food offered to idols and the larger context of idolatrous feasts. And that brings us then to our doctrinal teaching points for this second half of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So doctrinal or teaching point number one, celebrating the Lord's Supper portrays the unity of the Christian body. Celebrating the Lord's Supper portrays the unity of the Christian body. This is a great truth, and it's interesting that it is presented here in the context of Paul's answer to the Corinthians' question about pagan feasts. Now, what's the connection anyway? Back in chapter 8, Paul showed that it was okay to eat meat that had been offered to idols, which was a practice in the Greek and Roman culture of that day. It was okay because the meat itself did not become contaminated and the idols were just wood and stone. So long as weaker fellow believers were not stumbled, it was okay to eat this meat. But now, did this Christian liberty extend to participating in the Greek and Roman public feasts and festivals, which were all tied in with the Greek and Roman gods? Here, Paul's answer was different. Eating the meat apart from the pagan feasts was no problem. But participating in the pagan feasts and eating food thereof was a problem. In fact, it was idolatry. Now, why the difference? Because when you participated and ate the food there at the pagan feasts and festivals, you were linking yourself with the whole idolatrous system. The food itself was not evil or contaminated, and the idols themselves were only wood and stone. But the system was demonic. There really were demons associated with these idolatrous feasts and festivals. And when you participated, you actually shared in demonic practice. Just as the children of Israel had fellowship with the Lord and with each other when they participated and ate part of the peace offering in the Old Testament, verse 17, so if you as a Christian participated in a pagan feast or festival, you linked yourself, whether knowingly or unknowingly, with the demonic world surrounding that feast or festival. This is the context, then, of this wonderful truth about the Lord's Supper. When we participate in the Lord's Supper, we share in fellowship with each other and with the Lord himself. Verses 16 and 17. Let's read those verses again. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, though many, are one bread and one body, for we all partake of that one bread. Celebrating the Lord's Supper portrays the unity of the Christian body. Doctrinal point number two. Considering the Lord's body governs the use of Christian liberty. Considering the Lord's body governs the use of Christian liberty. Verses 23 through 33. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. Eat whatever is sold in the meat market, asking no questions for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness. If any of those who do not believe invites you to dinner, and you desire to go, eat whatever is set before you, asking no question for conscience sake. But if anyone says to you, this was offered to idols, do not eat it, for the sake of the one who told you, and for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and all its fullness. Conscience, I say, not your own, but that of the other. For why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? But if I partake with thanks, why am I evil spoken of for the food over which I give thanks? Therefore, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense either to the Jews or to the Greeks or to the church of God. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Don't pull verse 23 out of context. Verse 23, once again, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. The Bible is not saying here that any sinful activity is lawful. It's just not profitable or beneficial. No, sinful activity is unlawful. Paul is talking here about non-moral areas, such as eating meat, which had been offered to idols. That's the topic here. Now, we've seen that eating such meat in a restaurant, for example, was okay, as long as no fellow believer was stumbled. Chapter 8. But eating the meat and participating in a pagan feast or festival was wrong. But now what about buying this meat that had been sacrificed to idols in the marketplace? And what about eating this meat at a dinner party at some unbeliever's home? Here again, the answer was to consider the others around you. There is no problem in buying the meat and eating the meat, but don't stumble weaker believers and don't offend unbelievers. If you're at a dinner party with all unbelievers, for example, you can enjoy your steak without asking any questions about the food. But if some unbeliever raises the issue, and they will, then it's best to refrain from eating rather than possibly ruining your testimony and offending someone or hurting their conscience in some way. Our standard operating procedure should be verses 31 through 33. Let's read those verses once again. Therefore, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense, either to the Jews, or to the Greeks, or to the church of God. Just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many that they may be saved. Notice how verse 32 includes more than just the principle of not stumbling weaker fellow believers. We should try not to offend anyone, whether it be unbelieving Jews, unbelieving Gentiles, or believers in the church. We want unbelievers to be saved and to be added to the body of Christ. So considering the Lord's body should govern the use of Christian liberty. Practical application from this half of 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Would you go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras? Would you go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras? Now, with this question, I'm trying to illustrate and apply what Paul has been teaching in this chapter. If you asked me if I would go to New Orleans, I'd say yes, maybe for the Super Bowl football game, maybe to look at the architecture of the buildings, maybe to play golf in the winter. And if you were to ask me, would I go to New Orleans and eat Cajun food in a restaurant? Again, I would say yes, as long as no young believer was stumbled or anyone was offended with my actions. But if you asked me if I would go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, I'd say a resounding no. Now, do you see the difference? Mardi Gras is a pagan festival. I don't want to link myself in any way with Mardi Gras, with the food or the activities or anything associated with Mardi Gras. Even just going to observe makes me a supporting participant of that pagan festival. And you can be sure that there are demons behind Mardi Gras. So let me ask you the question. Would you go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras?